So, I'll start with the roll call. And this month's icebreaker is going to be, what is your favorite winter activity? What's your favorite winter activity? And as cool as it is, we know it's winter around here. So let's start with Ashley.
Say have like a physical activity, but I do like baking during the season because that's the mood for Christmas.
Yeah. Well, activity could mean baking or whatever. It doesn't have to be physical, although we probably should all get out and be physical.
That's true.
Great. All right. Thanks, Ashley. Elma, boom.
I would have to say skiing is my favorite. Downhill skiing. Cross country is fun too.
It's a good year so far, I think. I see a lot of snow in the mountains.
Hopefully.
Emily Estes.
My favorite is I go to Ashland for Thanksgiving every year. So I actually just got back, which was a very long drive with 2-year-olds. But my family lives down there. And if you've ever been there, it's just really, really cute downtown. And they have the Shakespeare Festival and everything, which isn't going on now, but it's a lot of fun.
Okay, Franklin Johnson. Franklin, if you're talking, you're on mute. We'll come back to Franklin. How about Assistant Chief Buste?
So my favorite winter activity, honestly, is being inside, staying warm, and drinking hot chocolate.
That sounds like a great activity. Dr. Fisher. I don't see him. Kimberly Dauphin. Don't see him either. Dr. Trong.
My favorite activity is taking my kids to Leavenworth.
Ooh, that sounds fun. Laurie Schott.
I have not gone snowshoeing in a long time, though I really enjoy it. So I would also say I love being inside and stoking a fire than having a big pot of soup going.
Oh, that's always fun after you've been out in the snow, though, too. All right, Mark Collier. Mark's not here. Marla Sanger.
I would say my favorite winter activity the last few years has been hiking in the Sonoran Desert and around Tucson. But we're here in is nice because we just bought a new home. So we're getting
Settled
settled.
in. I see the ladder in the background.
Yep, exactly.
Anissa Buchanan. Paul Childers. See him. Robert Ferrier.
I haven't had a chance to do it in a few seasons, but skiing is always fun.
Good. I'd say my favorite winter activity is looking at all the holiday lights or going somewhere warm. Scott Johnson.
Don't really do anything different in the winter than I do in the spring or summer. I just don't do it outside.
See Fernandez.
Yes, my favorite winter activity is I really enjoy going shopping for the Christmas tree. Get a real tree every year, and I like going to the Christmas tree farm and picking it out. Yeah, that's fun.
Have you done that yet?
Not yet. I had family for Thanksgiving, so we're going this weekend.
Good. Tyler, Clary.
Definitely downhill skiing. I've already gone twice this year, so good
Oh,
year.
great. All right. Is Counselor Young here? I don't see him. Dr. Melnick.
I'm going to cheat. My first grandchild is due December 26th, so my favorite winter activity is going to be hanging out with my grandchild and my kids. So.
Won't that be fun? A little Christmas baby. Andrea Pruitt.
Hey everybody. That's tough. I spent the last decade of my life before I moved here in Colorado. So cross country skiing, downhill skiing, backcountry skiing, and then I really enjoy hot yoga in the winter. So
Okay,
yeah.
that sounds warm.
It's hot.
Jerry Preston. Is he here tonight?
Yes,
There
good
you go.
evening, everyone. I'd say our favorite activity around here is because you can't do as much outside, we play games like a Sunday evening game night, board games, so puzzles. It's kind of our activity. Not too physical, but we really enjoy that.
An indoor thing you wouldn't want to do on a hot day. Jeff Harbison.
So my favorite winter activity is not being here. I like traveling to warm areas, Arizona, anywhere that will have me. I can't do it often enough, though. I will get in a round of golf even in the winter. I just went this past Sunday, so I refuse to let the cold weather, mess up any of my time.
Dan.
Is that me, Sandy?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. I like to, we really, my grandkids and I really like to go out, walk the dog, get freezing cold, come inside, sit by my little cheesy electric fireplace and drink hot chocolate and warm up. So it's really fun.
Sounds fun. That sounds fun. Mallory.
I grew up skiing and snowboarding my whole life, so that's what I like to do. But I also like to do some, sledding benefits. My
Kind of breaking up, Mallory, but I think I got sliding. All right, Franklin, we'll come back to you.
Can you hear me now?
I can, yes.
Yeah. Hello, everyone. Like some other people, I'm headed for someplace warm.
All right, and I think we have a guest tonight, Valerie Striplin. Would you like to share your favorite winter activity?
Hi, Sandy. My favorite winter activity is garden prep. So, like finishing up, cleaning up my garden from last season and getting it ready for the next season.
Okay, it's a year-round activity, isn't
Year
it?
round.
All right, did I miss anyone? All righty. Well, that's great. It sounds like we have lots of plans to play in the snow, go somewhere warm, and drink hot chocolate. I summarize that and play with grandbabies. All right. Great. Let's see. We need to review the minutes. Hopefully, everyone got a chance to look at the minutes. Does anybody have any additions, corrections, or changes? Right. Hearing none, can I have a motion to approve the minutes in a second?
Move to approve.
Second.
Thank you, Lori. Thank you, Emily. Okay, all those in favor of the minutes, say aye or raise your hand.
Aye.
Okay. Anyone opposed? Okay, the minutes have been approved. And I think Valerie's our only person from the public. And do you have anything to comments to make tonight, Valerie?
No public comment tonight, Sandy. Just wanted
Okay.
to join again. Thank you.
Thanks. I'm glad you're with us. All right. The next piece of the agenda is the discussion of some committee elections. We need to have elections for chair and vice chair and our our member at large, and Tyler being the, I'll make him the chair of the membership committee because he's here tonight. I'll have Tyler discuss that and kind of talk about what we're doing here.
Yeah, he said we have a great position.
You're breaking up a little bit.
We have taken nominations for the three different positions that we have opening up for us. And we will present a slate of candidates to the FAC in January for voting to make a determination on who is elected into those positions. So we are accepting nominations for those positions, which include the chair, the vice chair, and the member at large position. The member at large position is a 1-year term, whereas the chair and vice chair positions are 2-year terms. The current executive committee folks that are in those positions can they are eligible for running for another term if they so choose to do. So I'm not sure, Sandy, how you want to, do we want to try to take anybody, if anybody wants to nominate themselves tonight, or then we can at least get them on the agenda for a discussion. If you want to think about it some more after this meeting, and you can either email myself or Mallory or Sandy, and we can get you on the slate of nominees for next month for the election. But yeah, I guess we can take nominees now if people want to nominate themselves. Otherwise, we can probably move forward.
See if anyone's interested or want to be considered or have more of a conversation with Tyler about the positions. You can speak up tonight if you'd like. Typically, the vice chair, well, the vice chair and the chair are 2-year positions, like Tyler said. And the vice chair, the way our bylaws are, vice chair moves into chair position. So just so you're kind of aware of that if you run for the vice chair position. Silence out there.
Anybody interested?
I'm
Emily
in the vice chair and sort of, or I'm currently in the member at large and sort of doing the vice chair thing. And so I'd be interested in moving into one of those 2-year slots this next time around.
Okay, great.
So you and Tyler can have a great, thanks for volunteering. And I think you can have more of a conversation with Tyler, but he'll put your name on the list as the committee has conversations. So. All right. Well, if no one else wants to step forward today, be thinking about it, or you might get some calls, depending on what the committee decides. And so don't be surprised. And I thank you. And I know you've had correspondence with Michael as well. He's the other member of the committee. If there's anyone that would like to join them as a third member, I think they would be open to having a third person join their committee. Shouldn't speak for you, Tyler, but. All right. As he said,
pretty
that's like, pardon? You're open.
Pretty low time.
Okay.
You're both interested.
All right. Well, as he said, this slate of officers will be developed over the next month and will be presented at the next meeting in January, which will be a face-to-face meeting. So we'll get to vote at that meeting for those officers. So, all righty. Thank you, Tyler. Next is the Director Health Officer update, Dr. Melnick.
You know, the favorite thing I get to do in the winter is deal with respiratory illness. So not a favorite thing. So I didn't mention that. Least favorite thing. So the good news is that COVID-19 and RSV, respiratory syncytial virus activity, can be very low. So actually, the emergency department visits and hospitalizations for COVID-19 and RSV are lower than they were at the same time last year. ED visits, emergency department visits and hospitalizations due to influenza are similar to the levels they were at this time last year. So just to give you an idea, the latest data was that we have is from week 47 of the year, which is November 17th through the 23rd. 1.1% of hospitalizations and 0.5% of emergency department visits were due to COVID-19. 0.3% of hospitalizations and 0.7% of emergency department visits were due to influenza. But I want to give you a little bit of bad news about influenza. The report came out from our team that our labs, our partner labs in Clark County, have reported that influenza positivity is now at 7.3%. So 7.3% of labs, specimens in Clark County reported by the labs are now positive for influenza. And we declare influenza, once we get into sustained levels above 10%. So we're heading in that direction. I looked at the graph and it's beginning to skew up. So, and then RSV, very little of it, that 0.2% of hospitalizations and 0.1% of emergency department visits were due to RSV. The other bad news is that vaccines that provide protection against all three respiratory illnesses are available. They're freely available, but vaccination rates are low. And the vaccination rates in Clark County are lower than the statewide rates, which are already pretty low. So, for example, 13.9% of Clark County residents, 13.9% have received the updated 2024 to 25 COVID-19 vaccine compared to 14.8% statewide. 21.7% of Clark County residents have received the this year's flu vaccine compared to 23.6% statewide. I mean, less than a quarter of folks have received the influenza vaccine. And then 35.6% of adults and 75 and older in Clark County received the RSV vaccine compared to 38% statewide. So that's really disturbing. The numbers are low. And speaking of vaccine preventable illnesses, which we're going to see a lot more of, we're continuing to see really high rates of pertussis, also known as whooping cough, in Clark County and in the state as well. So the November data are still preliminary, and we're still investigating cases reported over the long weekend. But based on the preliminary numbers, we are up to 508 cases this year through November. And last year, to compare, we had 14 cases. So we're basically, if you do the math, we're close to 40 times the number of cases in this year compared to last year. We've had three hospitalizations already due to whooping cough, pertussis. Fortunately, no deaths. Most of the cases are among children and are unvaccinated or undervaccinated. So through October, we have the vaccination records. And you know that there's a series of doses that you get for pertussis. Over a half, 58% of cases had never even received one pertussis-containing vaccine. And then if you look at, you add the folks who are up, not up to date on their vaccine series, we're at 62%. So close to two-thirds of pertussis cases are either unvaccinated or undervaccinated. Over half of the cases, 53%, were among children ages 1 to 9, and 11% were among children younger than a year of age. So 11% of those 508 cases are in infants. And pertussis can be a deadly disease in infants. And one of the reasons we all get vaccinated is not only to protect ourselves from diseases like pertussis, but to protect the most vulnerable around us, which includes infants. So these numbers are disturbing. Statewide, there have been more than 1,500 cases in Washington this year. And I think my numbers may be wrong here. It's either 51 or 61 cases at the same time last year. But the bottom line is we're more than 20 to 30 times the number of cases in Washington state compared to last year. And we, when you think about the rate, the number of cases per population, so we're not only the county, the 508 that we have is the most of any county in the state, but we have the third highest rate of cases. So 95 cases per 100,000 population in Clark County. Some of the smaller counties, Whitman, we all know what's in Whitman, right? Washington State University, I believe, is in Whitman County. Whitman and Ponderay counties have the highest rate. They're small counties, so they don't have the numbers that we have, but they have high rates given their population. And last but not least, we're seeing a significant increase in chickenpox cases. So through November, we've had 51 cases of chickenpox. So that's pretty nearly as many cases we had if you, last year, which one we had 53 for the entire 12 months. We've had outbreaks at three schools since late September. Those outbreaks accounted for nearly half of the cases this year. One of the cases was ended. And then I was going to say that monitoring for the second case is concluding through today, and the third is still under monitoring. But we just had a new case at one of the schools. And so we're resetting the monitoring period for another 42 days to incubation periods. And all these cases are among children. And of all the cases where we know about their vaccination status, 80% were not up to date on their chickenpox vaccination. So that's my gloomy report. But what really worries me is, given our vaccination rates, this kind of, I'm concerned about, you know, what we're going to see for the rest of the winter, especially when we have people like in school and congregate settings. So that's my gloom and doom, and hopefully people will get vaccinated. That's it for my little respiratory illness update.
Anybody have any questions for Dr. Melnick?
This is Franklin Johnson. Doctor, I just wondered if you have any thoughts on the impacts to the medical and health landscape as the new administration takes office.
I don't want to speculate. Are you talking about what effects the changes in the federal agencies will have on us? Is that what you're asking?
Yes, and also the different values in terms of vaccinations and so forth.
Yeah. So one of the benefits of working in Washington State is that, and most of public health is a state. It's based on the Constitution doesn't include the word health in it. Public health is a, I hate to use the word police power, but it's a power that's really delegated to the states. It's not, so the public health laws and statutes are generally state-based. Well, not generally, they are state-based. And we have a pretty strong public health system and statute, you know, laws in Washington state. As you've seen around the country, that's not true in every state. And some states are gutting their public health laws. So we have a pretty strong public health system here. The only way the feds generally get involved is around regulating interstate commerce. And I can talk about, you know, somebody, for example, getting on a plane and with TB contagious and traveling across state lines, that's where they might get involved. And also around funding. So one of the concerns I have moving forward, which I always have concerns about, is federal funding. That is, you know, what happens? I'm always concerned about that. And I think, you know, I'm concerned about state funding as well, since those are concerns I have. In terms of the values and all that, as you know, one of the issues we have to deal with in public health is all the misinformation that's out there, including misinformation about vaccines, which we're just talking about. So any, you know, it depends on what happens and, you know, who we don't have the, I don't want to speculate too much on what may happen, but it's certainly important for the public health system to be aligned in terms of our use of science at all levels, local, state, and federal. So it remains to be seen, but do I have, you know, I always have concerns about that. So I'm not sure I'm answering your question really well, Franklin, but I don't want to speculate too much. So.
Thank you, Doctor.
Was there some movement towards like addressing vaccine hesitancy in Clark County in some way? I think we had talked about.
We have a variety of ways of trying to address that. We work with our partners on this. We have a social media presence. We get media information out. Dana, I don't know if you want to, Dana runs our, she's our director of investigation response and is overseeing all things infectious disease related, including our vaccination program. So Dana, I don't know if you want to give a little bit more details about what we do and in the immunization work we
Yeah,
do.
sure. Happy to. We have a couple of tactics that we employ. One, we have a really fairly robust immunization coalition that meets. Actually, their meeting is next week. That involves local community healthcare partners and just anybody that's interested. And we are also actively right now in the process. We're working on a fairly robust media campaign. It's got three phases to it. Phase one and phase two are completed. Phase three is specifically targeting our Russian-Ukrainian population and providers to see if we can get better understanding of what's actually happening within our community. We know that we have pockets of, low vaccination rates and high, oh my goodness. Yeah, sure. Oh my God. What's it called? Where you decline, declination.
Hesitancy,
Thank
vaccine
Oh,
hesitancy.
well, hesitancy, yes, but also
Oh,
where there's
exemptions. Is that what
exemptions.
you're?
Thank you. I am so sorry. High exemption rates across the county in some schools. So we're looking at ways that we can target that, better understand it, and try to like bring those individuals to the table to help us help them. So those are the big things we're doing right now, in addition to just our routine immunization work that we do. We have a nurse that participates in the child immunization program. She goes out to healthcare providers that are a participant and helps them with their immunizations and how to better educate individuals that come into their clinics.
I'll
So
tell
those
you
are.
these, you know, with the schools, with the with high exemption rates, which we have, and actually you can go on the state database. There's a you can actually click on immunization rates by school building, and you can look at, you know, county immunization rates as well as school building immunization rates. And there's some schools, overall our immunization rate is slightly lower than the state's overall. But if you look at certain schools, you know, the immunization rates in some schools is down in the 60% range. And that, and I'll tell you, you know, I talk about chickenpox, you know, we've had three outbreaks. It's incredibly disruptive because those exposed who are unvaccinated need to be excluded, whether they're students or staff. And that can be, you know, that can be disruptive to a school. And you know, so the other thing about it, these outbreaks, the chickenpox, not so much, but that measles outbreak, and we published a paper on that because we did the cost analysis. It's incredibly expensive, besides the morbidity and potential mortality involved. And vaccines are cheap, safe, and effective. I don't have the numbers in terms of it was millions. I think it was a few million for that. Those, and I we can get the article for folks. But that was due to around 71 cases of measles, and it was quite expensive when you think of time loss from school and work and productivity loss and all that and healthcare costs. It was huge. Sorry for blabbering so much. Marla's got her hand
Question?
up.
Yes, I'm wondering what has changed. It seems like it's been a number of years ago that the schools required children to have the required immunizations that are the recommended pediatric Academy of Pediatrics to come into kindergarten. And then I believe that they were expected to, and I don't know how they monitored this, if they even did, to maintain their compliance with immunizations while in school. So, and now it seems like that seems out the window.
They're still required, Marla. So, and we can get you the statutes and the administrative, Washington administrative code associated with that. Washington State has some of the more lax laws around vaccination. So for most vaccines, you can get a medical exemption, which is incredibly rare, really rare. You can get a religious exemption, although I don't know any religion that says thou shalt not immunize, but you can get a religious exemption. And then Washington has a philosophic exemption. You might recall after the measles outbreak in 2019, we had a bipartisan effort Representative Paul Harris is a Republican and Representative Monica Stoney, a Democrat, led the effort to remove the philosophic exemption for the MMR vaccine, measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, and that passed. So that vaccine does not have a philosophic exemption. The other school required vaccines do. I got to tell you, when the philosophic exemption went away, the religious exemption went up. But so you can get exemptions, but we made it a little bit more difficult around the MMR vaccine. But it is a requirement. You're required to be immunized in schools.
Thank you.
It was a great bipartisan effort back. I'm nostalgic for 2019 now, although not the measles outbreak.
I noticed when looking at that website that has school buildings, the biggest disparity seems to be just public versus private schools. And so do they have, I mean, they must have different requirement.
No, the laws apply to both private and public schools.
Gotcha.
What they have is, if you look, and I think the database has it, maybe not, I have to look at it again. You can look at the exemptions on there. So yeah. There are certainly more exemptions claimed at some of the private schools, but they're required to follow the same statute, same administrative code. And you are correct. If you look at some of the private, particularly some of the private religious schools, immunization rates get low. So we have some work to do with those populations. And you know, Dana and her team doing some work with those populations.
Any other
questions? Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for all that cheery news. I did. All right. I think our next agenda item is a budget update from Jeff.
All right. Thank you, Sandy. I don't have a bunch of really new information. The budget, the 2025 budget was on the agenda today for the County Council. They did not get through everything. They are reconvening tomorrow morning at 10 a.m., where I do expect the budget to pass. I don't expect any changes to what we submitted. However, the more difficult budgets ahead, I finally updated our projections for 2026. It is looking like we'll be at around a $2 million deficit. Our 2025 budget right now is a $23 million budget, just over $23 million. We're looking at about a $2 million deficit in 2026 and a little over $1 million for 2027. That's what the information I have available now. I'm going to be working on a five-year budget forecast through 2030 over the next few weeks. I'm meeting with the budget director Thursday. Also, I'm holding all staff brown bag budget updates. The first one is this week for all of our health staff to attend at their leisure. where I'll be sharing this same information, not to, you know, cause any panic, but to be as transparent as possible. We do have a handful of vacant positions where we've held on to that will be part of our reduction package for the 2026 budget. We'll obviously look at any attrition as it comes available through 2025. Not saying that every vacant position can be eliminated, but with a budget forecast like this, those conversations need to happen. So as far as facts involvement, I think we'll need to make sure we have the budget subcommittee identified by the end of February to make sure that we have proper time to go through the process. We won't begin working on the budget internally in the department until late March, but it'd be good for us to maybe have the committee defined by the end of February. So in March, we can look at our processes. I can update you and brief you on our processes and what our budget looks like before we actually get into the meat of the 26 budget. So sort of a budget 101 for us again in March, and then April, May, June, we'll be looking at the deficits and potential decisions. The $2 million deficit is, again, what I know now. What is beginning to concern me is I'm seeing deficit conversations at both the state and the local level. I saw an article recently that the state's looking at a $10 billion budget deficit. And if you watch any of the county council conversations, you see the general fund forecast showing deficits beginning in 2026, where they're beyond the minimum fund balance for the general fund. So the potential for both state and local cuts, it's higher than I've seen in a while. So I'm obviously concerned. I've been here since 1998, so I've been through the lean budgets. I've been through a three-year span where we laid off half of our positions. So I've definitely been through the ups and the downs. It's not looking great the next couple budgets. So that's, I'll leave it at that. If there are any questions, I know this was going to be a fairly brief presentation, but if there are any questions, I'll definitely field them. And then if you know you've got interest in serving on the budget subcommittee, feel free to email Mallory or myself. We'll definitely be asking for volunteers in the January and February meetings. So if there are any questions, I will take them.
I just saw, Jeff, not really a question, but more of a comment. I just saw an article that Governor Inslee has put a hiring freeze on for the state departments. So I think that's kind of related to what you're talking about here. So it sounds like some of the vacant positions that they may have open, there might be a freeze on those vacancies at this point. That's what was intimated in the article. So it sounds like they're taking steps to try to mitigate.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. I hadn't seen that, but that doesn't surprise me. I don't want to cause panic, but it's when we know we've got budget challenges ourselves, and then you see concerns at the local and state level, you sort of have that perfect storm sort of brewing. So it's scary. I will say some positive news. I believe it was last week I was listening to the county council. They're receiving testimony from other electeds, to consider a priority based budgeting approach and not doing, across the board cuts, if there are reductions, to be made within Clark County. I have always been a huge proponent of priority based budgeting, versus across the board cuts. You know, so if there is, a reduction directive for the general fund, it does at least sound like there might be some conversations about more of a prioritization approach, which I'm like I said, I'm definitely for. So,
and with a prioritization approach, we can get to talk about the value and the cost savings of prevention, which, I mean, I just gave you the example of the cost of the measles outbreak. So We'll enter into that conversation as well. May be able to get some help from FAC as well on some of that stuff.
Yeah, I do believe we will be engaging FAC around the budget more than we have in recent years. All right. Well, if there's no questions, thank you all for your time.
Thanks, Jeff. All right. Moving on to FAC updates, I'm going to call on Tyler again. Tonight, we need to vote on the bylaws changes that were presented at the last meeting. And if Tyler can just kind of review what those are so that we can be ready to vote. And tonight will be our first consensus vote since we changed those bylaws. So anyway, I'm going to turn this over to Tyler to explain what the changes are. You're breaking up again. Sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. I kind of talked through this at the last meeting, and but I'll go through it real quickly here again. I guess in the first paragraph here, in Article 2, Section 1, it talks about referring to the FAC as the council in this document. So one of the things we did was just clean up in other various locations where it was referred to as the advisory board, the board, the FAC, we just cleaned that up. We added a couple of just references there to the RCW and a link there at the beginning, and then you can keep scrolling down. Keep going, yeah. So there's just some of the changes. Keep scrolling. I think one of the bigger changes on the next page right there is probably one of the bigger changes. It's just clarifying where or when, how people will be nominated, I guess. In some cases, positions are nominated directly by the Board of Health. In some cases, they're nominated by another group. Like, for instance, the City of Vancouver position is nominated by Vancouver City Council and then presented to the Board of Health for their approval. So just clarify that. Moving down. Yeah, this is one that's potentially worthy of conversation. I'm not sure. Basically, it just says that the at-large member shall serve a one-year term with the ability to run for additional terms. It just clarified that the at-large member could run for additional terms if they so choose. I guess one of the questions I had on that one is that, do we want that position to be one that is limited to two terms? Do we want it to be a position that can indefinitely run? The way it's written right now, it looks like it's almost written as if they could run indefinitely.
So Tyler, I have a process question. Do you want to have like a pin in that for further discussion and then vote on the changes we have here tonight with a consensus decision-making process, Sandy, which I think you're going to do? Is that what you want to do? And then we can go back and look at further refining those specifics after that with some additional questions. Is that kind of what you're thinking, or?
Yeah, if that's I guess what the process is, if we're looking to actually have the complete vote, or whether, I didn't know if changes could still be made here and then vote on them or what. So
okay,
I guess I just want to make sure everybody's okay with this the way it's written up. Okay, not hearing anything, so I'm assuming that that's a yes, everybody's okay with it. I think that was the last change, if I remember right. Mallory, if you want to scroll down some more and make sure. Yeah, that's it. Now we get to try our consensus voting.
Does anybody have any questions or comments to be sure you're clear about what's being proposed? Hey, Quiet. Okay, so we're going to try our consensus voting tonight. And so, how this works is I'm going to go around and do like I do the roll call, and your responses can be yes if you vote if you're for these changes and you're okay with them, you would say yes. If you have a little question in your mind and you're not clear about something, but you're okay with it, but it's not a clear yes, you can say I can live with it. You can also say pause. You need more information and you want to pause before you make a decision. Or you can say block, which means you fundamentally disagree with this. So what happens is if we get a majority of the people who say yes or I can live with it, then these changes will become the part of the bylaws. If we have a pause, it means that we need to go back and have conversation on that. Those pieces that you have questions about. And so we want to honor making sure that you're clear about what's going to happen. And so if you have questions still, you would say pause. If we have no more than two people that block, then the bylaws will go into effect. If we have more than two people that block, then we have to go back to the drawing board. So do we have any questions about the process and what you, when I call on you, what your responses could be? All right. Hearing none, we'll
I
move.
would Sa
Oh, yes,
Sandy,
sorry.
I just wanted to say I think you explained it really well, and I don't think we'll really get to experience how it's going to work for us until we do it. So I'm glad that we're going to have the vote tonight, and we'll learn from just doing that. So thank you for leading that charge, and Tyler too, for getting us kind of prepared by reviewing the information that changed.
It was a while ago before since we've done this, and so I had to go back and review and kind of figure out how this is going to work. So I'm kind of excited to give it a try. So,
Good.
okay. With no other comments, I'm going to move on through and ask you for your vote of yes, I can live with it, pause, or block. All right, and we're going to start with Ashley.
Okay, with the bylaws that made a
So you're a
change.
yes. So you're a yes.
Yes.
Elma.
Yes.
Emily.
Yes.
Franklin.
Yes.
Assistant Chief Buste.
Sorry, took me a minute to unmute you. Yes.
Okay. Dr. Fisher.
Yes.
Let's see, she's not here. Dr. Trong.
Yes.
Lori Shaw.
Yes.
Marla Sanger.
Yes.
Nissa Buchanan. Oh, she wasn't here, sorry. Robert Ferrier.
Yes.
I vote yes. Scott Johnson.
Yes.
Tracy Fernandez, sorry.
Yes.
Tyler Clary.
Yes.
And I think that's everyone. All right. We had a majority of yeses. So that means that the changes that were just proposed are now official in our bylaws. And so we'll be getting those updated and probably sending out a new copy of the bylaws to everyone with the minutes at the next. Is that correct, Mallory? Okay. Well, thank you. That was easy.
Hey, Sam, oh, could I
Lori.
ask one process question about it?
You
But
bet.
so say someone did say pause in order to get some more information. Once they got that, would they then have the opportunity to change their vote, or are they registered as a pause?
It's my understanding that once everybody went through, then we would go back and say there have been a pause, and we would give those people an opportunity to ask the questions and get clarification, and then we can go back and have them revote.
Great, thank you.
Because at that point, they could say, I fundamentally don't agree, or a yes, or I can live with it kind of vote. Good question. All righty. Thank you, everyone. You made that easy. let's see, some up membership updates. We have a nurse practicing in Clark County. We've received an application and that is currently being reviewed and going before the council. So hopefully she'll be able to join us in January in an official capacity. And if not, we've invited her to join us anyway. Because it's a face-to-face, it'd be nice to meet her face-to-face. We still have an opening for the Clark County Educational Community position. And I'm not sure we got anybody by the end of November. Is that correct, Mallory?
Correct. We've extended the deadline through the 31st of this month. We did receive an email of someone who might be interested, but they wanted to have further conversation. So I reached to Roxanne and Alan, but we haven't gotten it further quite yet. So more
Okay.
to come on that.
Well, that person can be put into the pool this large pool that we're going to get in December. So if anyone knows, again, we're kind of putting the word out there that if you know anyone in the educational community that might be interested, we're really wanting to get a candidate in to fill that position. So I think those are the updates. I want to turn it over to Roxanne now to talk about the retreat planning.
Okay, great. Thank you. So let me pull up. We've been working with our committee, our Board of Health FAC retreat planning committee. And we've had a couple of meetings and we have another meeting next week, which I anticipate will be our final meeting. We've been really trying to dial in the agenda. And I mentioned last time, but we're still looking at probably the end of the first quarter of 2025 or the beginning of the second quarter. So late March, early April-ish timeframe. We're still waiting for our new counselors, our new elected counselors to be seated to be able to put a poll out to identify the dates and times people are available. So it's kind of the timeframe. We are going to be looking at a almost all day between like around from 9 to 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So it's a 6 hour kind of a timeframe. We will be bringing in lunch and we have several discussions and activities that we're planning for the agenda. Really, the intent of this first retreat is to, number one, get to know each other and understand sort of the roles and responsibilities and the focus of public health, you know, what public health's, you know, purview is. So really getting some of that foundational kind of understanding about our roles and responsibilities. And then also, looking at some opportunities for connecting and integrating FAC into and Board of Health going forward. So we've already had some, you know, kind of suggestions about how we would do that. And, you know, right now, we expect that we will probably have, at least one in-person meeting, joint meeting, possibly 2 a year is kind of where we might land. But that's really more of the discussion for our first retreat that's going to happen. And so we're continuing to work on that. I think our final meeting with the team to go over our dialed in agenda is next week. And then we will be working on all of those logistics, and we will be sending out communications and polls for the available date or for the date that folks are available and that sort of a thing. Probably, I don't know, at this point, it might be late December, possibly early January to see that poll. So that's kind of where we're at right now. I really appreciate we've had some really, really good discussion, and a lot of folks have provided feedback. I know that in addition to Councillor Marshall, Councillor Young has also joined some of those meetings, including some of the folks from our FAC committee as well. And then also Kathleen Otto has joined, and Jordan, who is our policy analyst at the our le and our legislate he develops the legislative priorities for the county. He works in, under Kathleen in her office. So he's been at those meetings as well. So it's been a really good group and a diverse group that has been helping to put together this agenda. And I hope you all will find it really, really helpful and engaging. And so, and that's the intent. And we will be bringing in lunch for everybody that day as well and giving folks an opportunity to do some more sort of building relationships with each other during that lunch period. So any questions on that?
Will that be at the training center in the,
yeah,
or at public health? Yeah.
I think right now, so it is going to have to be publicly noticed, and we will have to have an opportunity for the public to be there. So we do intend to have it at the Public Service Center on Franklin Street downtown. Excuse me. I expect it's going to be kind of on the sixth floor where there's the hearing room, and then there's some double doors that open up so we can kind of extend that space. The public members will not be able to make any comments, but they can certainly be there to observe. So we do need to have a space available for them as well during that meeting. So that's another reason why we're considering, or we're expecting to have it at the Public Service Center on Franklin Street. Good question. Any other questions or comments? All right. Well, I think it's going to be a great meeting. So I really appreciate everybody's help. And as we've been putting this together, it's been some really great dialogue. So thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Roxanne, for taking the lead on this. And I think it's exciting that we're going to start having some more conversations. There's been an interest on both sides for a year or two now. And so I'm excited for us to get that started.
It's going to be great.
Great. Okay, the CCPH transition plans. Dr. Melnick or Roxanne, are you going to take that on?
You want me to start, Roxanne?
Sure. Yeah, go ahead.
So so I'll start with the deputy health officer. Do you want to start with? Do you want to comment on the deputy director, or should I go ahead and do that?
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead and you can go ahead with the deputy health officer, and then announce. You know, we could talk a little bit about deputy director positions.
Mm-hmm. So
we can
talk. So we as you know, we've been without a deputy health officer since I think it's almost a year. It's like late January last year. So we've successfully recruited a deputy health officer. Her start date is January 6th of 2025. She's an internist who actually practices as a hospitalist both at Peace Health Southwest and Peace Health St. John's. She'll be able to continue to do. She wants to keep her clinical skills up. So she wants to do some hospitalist rotations, which she will be able to do on weekends as long as she and I can share coverage to make sure we're covering health officer roles 24/7. We also provide health officer services for Skamania, Wakayakum, and Pacific counties. So she will be doing that. She's got a master's in public health, so she meets, besides being a licensed physician, meets the state requirements in terms of health officer. She'll start, because she has some hospital rotations already set up, she'll start part-time in January and then move to full-time in mid-February. Some of you may know her, since she's a practicing hospitalist. Her name is Brianna Da Silva Bhatia, so... we're really excited to have her start. So I don't know if any folks have any questions. We'll introduce her to FAC also. So
I think Lori has a question.
Sorry, I was just trying to say good work on finding someone. That was just, sorry, my bad.
She's also done some international work with a group called Physicians for Human Rights. So that you can look them up. I think they won a Nobel Prize a while ago. So she has some population-based experience there as well, which will serve her well.
All right. So I also wanted
to talk about I'm sorry.
Yeah,
Do you want to do it, or do you want me to talk about the deputy director?
Yeah, I can go ahead and let everybody know what's going on. So I have made a decision. I'm actually going to be leaving Clark County, and I'm going to be moving back to the Midwest with my family. We have my family members have my family has some more family members back there, and that's going to be very helpful for ongoing support system for my family here. So I think we're going to end up in this sort of Minnesota area. I'm not going to any other jobs or anything like that, but this was really the best decision for my family at this time in my life. Very, very difficult decision because I love working here and I love Clark County and I love my team and the team members that I am so privileged to work with. So it's been a very difficult decision. The vortex, the cold vortex that's sweeping through the Midwest right now, I'm thinking, huh, I made a great decision. So I laughed when we were having the icebreaker about your favorite, your favorite winter sport. I think, or your favorite winter thing to do in the winter. I think I'm going to have that, opportunity all year round where we're moving. But it is, with really a heavy heart, but at the same time, a really, good opportunity for my family and certainly something that they need at this stage in our lives. So I wanted to share that with you. I'm getting a little emotional. We did post the deputy director position. And that's out there. It's in national. We're looking nationally as well as, locally and at the state level. And so you're certainly welcome to offer, that posting to any of your colleagues, network. We certainly are looking for folks with, public health experience and certainly experience working with the community. I definitely think that, we want somebody that has a great lived experience, so we're not looking at specifically just folks with public health experience, but, they're able to bring an lived experience with them as well that can help us with moving our racial equity work forward as well. So if you have any thoughts or suggestions, please let us know. And my last day with Clark County will be in early January. I did want to let you know, though, that I'm going to have our Board of Health back retreat agenda all wrapped up by the end of the year. So that will be done. And then our team here, we have a great project team internally that's going to continue to support FAC and support FAC executive and then also plan and make sure that retreat grows without a hitch. So I just also want to thank our internal team here for all your support around that. So anyway, so that's it. That's my announcement. I'm going to miss you all. I've really appreciated getting to know you all and really grateful for all the work you're doing in our community, and also your participation on FAC. It's such a critical and important role that you play in advising our Board of Health on policy decisions. So I appreciate having the opportunity to get to know you all a bit. So thanks, everybody.
And you're going to be missed greatly. You're a great leader for public health, and I've worked with you off and on for a number of years, and you're just a fabulous person, and you're going to be missed. Your shoes will be hard to fill, but we'll move on.
Yeah.
And I wish you the best as you move to Minnesota.
Thank you.
We'll move on, but it's a critical loss for our community.
Yes.
I'm still trying to work through all this, but we will move on. But I've what a privilege it has been, an honor to work with Roxanne all these years. She's the best, and I'd stack her up against any other public health. I've been around for many decades in public health, working in health departments in states, in different states, and working at the national level, and I'd stack Roxanne up against any public health leader that I've worked with over many decades.
Thank you so much. And thanks for all the comments too and chat. I really appreciate it so much. Yes.
The job posting is on the county website. So you can go to clark.wa.gov and look at job postings. It's on there if you want to share it with anybody. We're advertising nationally through the American Public Health Association and National Association of County and City Health Officials, at the public health associations in both Washington and Oregon. So we have it out there, but if you could think of any, share with your network, share it on social media. If you have whatever, get it out there. But it's gonna, Roxanne's gonna be a hard act to follow. So
Well, thank you, everybody. I appreciate it very much.
Right.
it's interesting that we use the term icebreaker for the
All
deal
righty.
today. So,
Well, I was laughing. I was telling somebody that I my first purchase is snow pants, so I got my snow pants ready. So we'll see how it goes. I don't know. Maybe the worst decision of my life. We'll see.
well, you said you like to go out and get really cold. It won't take you long back there.
Correct. Correct.
Five
I just
minutes and you're
think
back in the house.
Fargo when I think of, Minnesota and North Dakota. So.
Oh, all right. The last thing on the agenda is any community updates. Does anybody have updates of things you're involved with or things going on in your organization that you want to share with the group? End of the year things.
I have a couple of, this is Franklin Johnson. I have a couple of comments. At our November meeting, we handed out for the first time two Silver Citizen Awards. One went to Bev Jones of Battleground, and the other to Larry Smith of Vancouver. He's a former city council person who has continued to be heavily involved in so many volunteer efforts, as well as the efforts of Bev Jones. So I just wanted to share that.
Franklin. Anybody else? Right. Well, with nothing more, our next meeting will be January 28th. It will be an in-person meeting. So dinner will start at 5 o'clock and the meeting will start at 5:30, and it'll be held at the Public Health Building like we did our last in-person one. So January 28th. And so far on the agenda is our election of our new executive committee. And I'm sure we'll have many more things on the agenda as well. So, and with that note, we can end the December meeting, and I want to wish everybody a happy winter season, and we'll see you next year.
Thank
Bye,
you.
everyone. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Happy holidays.
Bye, everybody.